So the title of my presentation is Disparities in Perceptions Related to HPV Self-Testing Among Women at Higher Risk for Cervical Cancer. I have no financial disclosure to disclose at this time. So each year in the United States, over 4,000 women die from cervical cancer, which is caused from persistent HPV infection. HPV is the most common sexually transmitted infection. Certain groups of women are disproportionately affected by cervical cancer, and these women are African-American women and Hispanic women. For example, African-American women are twice as likely to die from cervical cancer than non-Hispanic white women, and Hispanic women are more than 50% more likely to die from cervical cancer than non-Hispanic women. Also, women from low socioeconomic status and women not recently screened are also disproportionately affected by cervical cancer mortality. It is reported that 80% of age-eligible women receive a Pap test in the last 3 years, but this may be less for racial and ethnic minorities. Persistent disparities in screening and mortality rates may suggest the need for a novel approach to cervical cancer screening for women who are not currently reached by existing screening measures. So HPV self-testing is one such strategy to expand cervical cancer screening for higher-risk populations. HPV self-testing is a newer way to screen for cervical cancer. It is currently the standard of care for women between the ages of 30 to 65. The kits comes with a vaginal swab, a collection vial, and instructions for use. So the women themselves would use the vaginal swab to collect a sample from their cervical vaginal canal, place that sample within the vial, and then mail it back to the lab for testing. Now, this test is similar to what is currently done by healthcare providers, except that with the HPV self-testing, it doesn't reach as deeply within the cervix as the tests done by healthcare providers. However, multiple studies show that the sensitivity of the HPV self-test is very high in its ability to detect the high-grade cervical lesions. So the possibility of using this test as another way to screen women who are not currently screened by current cervical cancer screening methods could potentially alleviate such barriers as transportation, cost, important insurance status, and healthcare provider availability, as such as those. So the purpose of this study was to assess cognitive factors related to HPV self-testing among higher risk women. More specifically, we looked at HPV-related knowledge and perceptions and trust in HPV self-testing. We also examined how these factors varied by race and ethnicity. So why does it even matter whether or not there's disparities in trust in HPV self-testing? Well, for one, the strength of the test is in its ability for it to be used by women who are not currently screened. So the test only works if these women use it. So finding out whether or not this test is acceptable or even trusted by these women of different racial and ethnic groups who are not currently screened for cervical cancer is essential in the way we then go about introducing this test to this population of women. The name of this study was called the My Body, My Test study, and in it we assessed the feasibility of a HPV self-testing by mail for higher risk women. Our eligibility criteria included women between the ages of 30 to 65 years, women who met one or more indicator of economic hardship, for example, if they were on Medicaid or if they lacked health insurance, and also women who it had been more than 4 years since their last Pap smear. Our target population was to reach a hard-to-reach population of women. So because we wanted to do that, we used multiple recruitment strategies. First, we used the North Carolina 211 information hotline. We also recruited women from who participated in health-related programs serving low-income women. And we also distributed information at local churches, daycare centers, and gathering places. And we used the print and radio and television as other strategies for our recruitment of these women. In total, about 887 women were screened. During initial screening, 421 did not meet our initial criteria for age, income, or cervical cancer screening history, so they were eliminated, and then 172 women did not complete the survey as well. This left 294 survey respondents, and a further after further screening, 95 more women were excluded, which left a final sample of 199 women. The average age of our sample of women were 44 years old. The majority of our women were African Americans, women with 55%. 33% of our sample was non-Hispanic white women, and 13% categorized as other. And this category consisted predominantly of Hispanic women. 65% of our sample were uninsured, 63% had less than a high school degree, and only 14% had a household income of more than $20,000 a year. So again, this just goes to show that our sample of women were from a low socioeconomic status and that it was a very racially diverse sample as well. For our data analysis, we use descriptive statistics to assess cognitive factors related to HPV self-testing. We also use linear and logistic regression to assess bivariate associations between demographic characteristics and psychosocial measures. By psychosocial measures, I mean HPV self-testing, HPV and cervical cancer screening. And then we then entered the statistically significant correlates into a multivariate model. For our results in trust in HPV self-testing, we use three items as indicators of women's trust in HPV self-testing. The first was the belief that HPV test is safe. The second was the belief that the HPV test gives accurate information on cervical cancer risk, which we termed sensitivity. And the third was belief that a positive test result indicates high risk for cervical cancer, which we termed the test's positive predictive value. So here we see that a high amount of women had a high to moderate trust in HPV self-testing. Now this is actually really good news considering the fact that the test really does have a high sensitivity and moderate specificity in reality. So this is good to see. And we also found that there were no disparities on the trust variable. In terms of our HPV-related knowledge and perceptions, these findings, if you look on the left, you'll see that we use five items to assess HPV-related knowledge. Two of these items had true answer as being correct, and three of these items had a false answer as being correct. And those are the ones with the asterisk next to it. The two items that had a true answer as being correct was, could HPV cause cervical cancer, and can HPV cause genital warts? The three items that had a false answer as correct was, is HPV rare, can HPV cause herpes, and is HPV curable? Now, in general, we found that HPV-related knowledge was very low in our sample. Although most women knew that HPV could cause cervical cancer, fewer than half knew that HPV is not rare, that HPV can cause genital warts, and that HPV does not cause herpes. And only 10% of women knew that HPV is not curable, and 60% of those women answered it incorrect. What's also interesting is if you look at the red bars going across each of the five items, you'll see that for a lot of these questions, many of these women just did not know what the correct answer was. We found that there were racial and income disparities related to HPV knowledge. For HPV-related knowledge, African-American women less often had high HPV-related knowledge at 0.46. And we also found that women with an income more than $20,000 a year had almost three times the odds of having a high HPV-related knowledge. For our item on belief about which test protects better, by far we see that most women thought that both tests would protect them equally well, with 19% believing that the Pap test would protect them best and only 6% believing that the HPV self-test would protect them better. Here we found that there were significant differences in preference for the HPV self-test related to age and insurance status. We found that preference for the HPV self-test related to being an older age, between the ages of 50 to 65, and that preference was also related to having health insurance. For the likelihood of cervical cancer without regular screening, we see that 18% believe that they had a high likelihood of cervical cancer without regular screening, 22% believe they had a moderate likelihood of cervical cancer without regular screening, 27% believe they had a low likelihood of cervical cancer without regular screening, and 19% did not know what their likelihood of cervical cancer was without regular screening. Here we see again that there were racial and income disparities in the likelihood of cervical cancer. We found that African American women less often believed that they had a high to moderate likelihood of getting cervical cancer without regular screening. And also that women with an income between $10,000 to $20,000 had a lower odds of believing they had a high to moderate likelihood of cervical cancer. So in summary, the findings were that trust in HPV self-testing was moderate to high across all demographic groups. African American women were less likely to have accurate HPV-related knowledge or to perceive cervical cancer as likely in the absence of regular screening. Women making less than $10,000 a year were least likely to have accurate HPV-related knowledge, and women with an income between $10,000 to $20,000 were less likely to perceive high to moderate risk of cervical cancer. So how could we understand these findings in the scope of things? I think the best way to think about this is to think that we have good news here and then we have some bad news. So the good news is that overall trust in HPV self-testing was very high regardless of what these women's race and ethnicity was. But on the other hand, some of the bad news is that there are significant disparities related to HPV knowledge in these women and also in their perceived likelihood of cervical cancer without screening. So this tells us that we can't assume women know about cervical cancer or that we know how susceptible they believe themselves to be without regular screening. So as healthcare providers, I think we must take the time to assess our patients' HPV knowledge and beliefs and to find out what strategy would be best to meet their need, and potentially the HPV self-test could be one of those strategies to be used. One limitation of this study was that our sample was a small sample from North Carolina. However, although this was one of our limitations, it was also our strength in that our sample was of women who were of low socioeconomic status. They were an underscreen woman, and they stand the most to gain from using this test. Also, another strength is that this test evaluated the HPV self-testing in the context of a home use versus a clinic-based use. And so this offers some insight into how women could potentially use this test and what their acceptability of this test would be in the future. So in conclusion, this study supports that HPV self-testing may be a useful strategy to expand cervical cancer screening to high-risk women. However, for the strategy to be beneficial, it is important that healthcare providers acknowledge that there is disparity related to HPV knowledge and also on their patients' perceived cervical cancer risk without regular screening. I'd like to thank the supporters of this study, Kate B. Reynolds Tribal Charitable Trust and the UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center's Cancer Control Education Program. And also thank you all for your time. Are there any questions? Yes. That's one area that we have to look into to see whether or not it is cost effective, but I think that whether or not that after finding out whether it is cost effective or not, that regardless, I think that if we target this this screening tool to a specific population of women who are in need of it, whereas we already have screening tools that are already being provided by healthcare providers, I think it may be best in terms of how we manage this tool and how we use it and distribute it to different populations of women. I think if we do that, then it could be more cost effective in how we use the screening tool. Yes. They were provided with the test. Yeah, that's another portion of this that I wasn't speaking on today. But they did provide the women. They received the test. They did it at home. We asked questions dealing with the feasibility of the test for them, and then they mailed the test back to for it to be tested, and then they received their results at the end.
Does that bring up the next question?
That is, because there would need to be a set up way for them to get the test back and then get their results and then get the follow-up care that they need after getting their results. So that's another part of this as well. Yes.
You said that the self-test has a high sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Was that just for higher grade lesions?
I believe so. Well, I think that it goes back to looking at who the women are that would potentially be using this test. If they are women who have not been screened in the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years, they could potentially be at higher risk for cervical cancer. And the type of grade of the lesion that they would have would potentially be high grade. But I do agree that, you know, that we do need to push also for them to actually see their healthcare providers and get tested by them. But for those women who are not currently doing that, and that may not be an option because of transportation or where exactly they live compared to where their healthcare providers are, this could be another viable option for them. Thank you.
Thank you.